we have this kind of built-in desire to want to worship something outside of ourselves. And if somebody takes that and hijacks it for their gain, right?
Yeah.
Their money, their sex, right? Like all these things. I think that's kind of where you get into this cult. Like,
welcome to the Brothers Random Show. My name is Travis.
And I'm Michael.
And we are two ordinary brothers discussing extraordinary ideas and some random shit. So the topics on this show range from theology, masculinity, movies, philosophy, books, pop culture, and many other subjects. We often talk about the people we admire and the wisdom that they share. People such as Dr. Jordan B. Peterson, who we believe is the sage of our time. Michael, what are we doing today?
Talking about cults versus religion. We've had a lot of interaction with our subscribers, our followers, and we, being that we grew up on a polygamist compound that we sometimes call a cult,
or diet cult.
One of our,
I like diet cult.
Diet cult, yeah. One gal commented, she's like, it doesn't sound like a cult. It just sounds like a family that lived on a ranch. And I mean, it's like,
yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not. So we've had a lot of conversations around this, and we've had Nathan Diltz on, and he talked about, you know, Mormonism and polygamy. And so we just wanted to kind of talk about, you know, cult versus religion and kind of get into that. So,
and I'm going to read a couple of like Britannica and Webster dictionary definitions that I saved, because I think that kind of helps as a jumping off point. Yeah. So, the Britannica dictionary definition of a cult is a small religious group that is not part of a larger and more acceptable religion that has beliefs regarded by many people as extreme or dangerous. And that's that definition of a cult. And then Oxford Dictionary defines a cult as action or conduct action or conduct indicating belief in obedience to and reverence for a god, gods, or similar superhuman powers. Mm-hmm. So essentially, they're very close to each other, the definitions.
It's interesting because I, in preparation for this video, I was watching, and I didn't grab his name, but a video a guy put together, and he does studying into ancient cultures, which cult and culture actually stem from, I think it's culturus, which is the same they both are derived from the Latin word culturus, that the definition. Yeah. So, which cult, which shares an origin with culture and cultivate, comes from the Latin cultus, a noun with the meaning ranging from tilling, cultivation, or training or education, to adoration in the English.
Well, and that's changed in our society, because I think, you know, and we like to, when we talk about the way we're raised, we like to kind of make light of it, because it, you know, there's the extremes and then there's the non-extremes, right? So I would say, like, many people like to paint the LDS church as a cult, but it's very, like I like to say, it's very cult light. It's very diet cult. It's not, and Jordan Peterson, I think it was Jordan Peterson who said this, who said, how do they treat the individual? Now, is the individual being enlightened and getting good, and or are, like, what Scientology does is they actually lock their people up, like, in a, like, if they like stray from the path. They actually lock them up and don't allow them to leave the grounds, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and that seems very, Joe Rogan and Brett Weinstein did a podcast a few years ago,
which is great. And yeah. It's
a great podcast. And they got into it about a cult versus a religion. And his point was that there's no difference because there's still, and Brett Weinstein, who isn't a religious person, but he's a biologist. He says, I believe the quote was, one is predatory and one is not.
Before. There is the predatory version, mm-hmm. which I would call a cult.
Right.
And there is the earnest version, which I would not call a cult. Now, I'm very uncomfortable with any of these things governing policy in the present because. Mm-hmm.
So whatever you deem as predatory would probably be equated with the cult mentality.
Yeah. And it's fun because their exchange is really interesting because but Jordan both, Peters or sorry, both Joe
atheists.
Yeah, they're both. Yeah. And Joe basically says that Catholicism is a cult.
Yeah.
And Brett, not being religious, he's like, whoa.
That's an extreme way of looking at it.
Let's talk about this. You know, and Brett is a biologist. So the way he views it is more of like a kind of survival of the fittest sense of religion, right? So Darwin coming up with the survival of the fittest is that the one that in species, the strongest one survives, right? Well, in religions,
the strongest religion survives.
Yeah. So, and this kind of, go ahead.
Well, and they're both coming at it as non-religious people as well. Mm-hmm. And so naturally I think Brett was trying to get at was that if it enlightens people or if it makes their lives better, then it is a religion.
Well, he kind of says it. So I wrote it down. He says, religion. So a cult would be an organization that has become predatory,
mm-hmm.
and a religion facilitates collaboration and disrupts processes. So it disrupts processes that cause infighting.
Mm.
So it to him, it's more about collaboration. So you get people together to collaborate. And I think that's his kind of view on religion just in general. You know, if we all believe in a God, then we can collaborate better together. Right. Yeah. And that's probably how he would view it as a biologist. I think in a sense we're kind of missing in our society right now.
Well, yeah, if we're it feels very much like our society is becoming more tribal and religion originally like monotheistic religion was meant to bring people together to make them unified in like one belief, right?
Well, and it's probably the strength of Catholicism versus like Judaism. Judaism more or less wanted just for one people, one culture, and that was what it was built for.
Whereas Catholicism was like everybody.
We're gonna gather up everyone. Doesn't matter. Greek.
That is interesting. Like, that's an interesting doesn't matter. Thought.
You're coming into the fold, believing in Jesus. Now, the Catholic Church went through some real
horrific stuff.
Some point. Yeah. Spanish Inquisition. And
this is what they also cover this too, because any organization can have corruption. It doesn't matter if it's a religious organization or if it's a political organization or if it's a, you know, it can have corruption. So what the point is that Brett is trying to say is that the religion survived the corruption. So if you think of like the Spanish Inquisition as this corrupt bureaucratic ideology that was horrific to regular people, it eventually got out of that and it's become this good force in the world right now.
Yeah.
I would say it's a good force in the world right now, because it's like, it's teaching, you know, love and society and stuff like that.
Not that this is a very well-known book, but the book, The Last Templar, was about the sense that there was a time when the Catholic Church needed to be fought against, and that now the Catholic Church doesn't need to be fought against. Now, obviously there's going to be people who hate the Catholic Church and do think it should be fought against, or the Mormon Church. I mean, for that matter, right. Who believe that the Mormon Church needs to be fought against.
It kind of goes back to the whole thing again. Is it providing good for the individual, or is it providing
or is it predatory?
Or is it predatory?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a tough, and it's a valid discussion to have. Because I mean, a couple times we've talked about some of the things that we don't like about, I guess, the LDS Church, but I mean, and we're seeing a time when there's been an exodus out of religions in general, just across the board,
and people discovering that that is a bad thing.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Suicide rates are skyrocketing right now. And yeah. I think when people are in despair and don't believe in something outside of their own like reality right now, then they don't believe that there's any point in furthering the light, our lives.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What nihilism, what religion does is it brings something to you that gives you comfort in the hard times. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not for some people like rationalists that they're going to have a hard time with that. They're just going to, and that's where the struggle comes in. Right. You know, we are Israel. We wrestle with God, you know, and that's another good thing about it is like, and we've talked about this before, but I think Dennis Prager said this at one point. He basically points out that he told his Jewish Bible school teacher that he didn't want to pray. He didn't feel like praying. And the teacher was like, who cares if you feel like praying? Do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole point of that is that if you get into a repetition of it, that when you actually need it, when life gets you down and you need something in your life, that you've created the habit so that it's easier to do. Right.
Right. Right.
It's easier to be a part of a religion if you're constantly practicing it. I guess that's
there's a lot of scholars out there that would say something to the effect of that religion is just self-help for the masses, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It and I mean, I think that's not disparaging, I don't think, really, because it's like, hey, life is tough.
Yeah,
you know, we do need help through this, right? Yeah. And sometimes we need each other, and sometimes we need a logos of an out there ethic, a higher power that we can aspire to that can really help us. Yeah, yeah. Get us through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
it Why don't you read that quote that that lady?
Oh yeah, Megan Goodwin. So
she's a doctor.
Megan Goodwin is kind of just a scholar on new religious movements, and she said that cults basically equal religions I don't like. And we kind of get into this place, I think nowadays especially, where it's just like, it's like, oh, you have a group of people that you agree with and you think with and you kind of go along with, and I don't like that group of people. Yeah, you're a cult, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's interesting because you and I are both students of Dr. Peterson, and what we noticed is that when we put this out there, a lot of the comments that like to talk about this kind of stuff, I don't know if you want to call them vultures, maybe you want to call them vultures, but they mentioned that we left one cult for another cult, right?
The Jordan Peterson cult,
which
yeah.
is bogus, because I don't see him as a religious figure, although he does teach many religious things. I see him as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That is the definition of what, as far as I believe, my beliefs towards him. Now, and by not seeing him as a deity or as a religious, what do you want to call it? Religious
saint kind saint, of thing,
whatever,
yeah,
you want
or
to
something
call it.
Like that. Yeah,
if prophet. He does something wrong, then I'm okay with saying, okay, now maybe I move on to something else. If he ends up doing something completely, I don't think he is, because he's a person. He's not a person I know, but because he's a person, he's going to make a mistake, right? And he has made a few mistakes in the past. He gets in trouble on Twitter a lot. And I don't condone those mistakes, but I also get the reasons why he does them. So if I was a zealot, I would believe everything that he said, and I would not scrutinize any of it. That's what a zealot does.
Yeah. And also the definition, one definition I heard of a cult, and I'm paraphrasing, but it basically was that if you have a group that that demands from its followers that they do not associate with people outside of the group, as well as they, if someone questions or breaks away from the group, they become ostracized. So like you and I, if we met somebody that was a fan of Jordan Peterson and then decided that down the road he wasn't a fan of Jordan Peterson anymore, it's not like we would find a need to ostracize this person.
To keep him, I think, to, like, not be around him anymore. And
you can't talk to other Jordan Peterson fans because you will pollute their mind. I have to stop you, right?
this is where religion separates people from their families, right?
Well,
a cult would separate people from their families.
A cult, and this maybe goes into another kind of type of definition of a cult, and I can't remember. I want to say it was Megan Goodwin that had this definition, because I read a few quotes of hers, that another definition of a cult would be that a cult strives to definitely make sure that it is separate from the overall culture, and whereas a religion actually has
tries to integrate itself into the culture. This is the reason why Mormonism had to get rid of polygamy, because polygamy was such a hot topic in the 1800s. They couldn't integrate themselves into the culture. And so they got rid of polygamy, and they're integrated into the culture to the point where now everybody knows the Mormon Church. The Mormon Church is what, 11 million people, I believe. I'm just pulling numbers out, but
I've had conversations with people that think it should probably be more like 5 million, That 5 million is being generous. I don't know. They claim 16 million, I think.
But that's on the second biggest church in the United States, right? Just under the Catholic Church.
Just under the Catholic Church.
That's what I thought. Know, that'd
probably be a good thing to look up. But the way they count the numbers, somebody could be baptized and then just never go back again.
Oh yeah, okay.
So their family leaves or whatever, and they just don't get around to going and asking for their name to be removed from the records or whatever.
Yeah.
So if they're going off of those numbers, you've got somebody who was baptized when they were 8 and has never done anything with the Mormon Church ever since.
Yeah.
And they're counting them as a member. It's like, so we don't really, I guess we just don't really know exactly the number, but this is
one of the reasons I like to call it diet cult, because with the whole point is that people get good out of the Mormon Church, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Mormon Church isn't trying to tell their members, like, if you join this church, don't cut your family. Now, some people might be trying to do that, but the whole, one of the tenets of a cult is that they make you, once you join, you're not allowed to talk to the people who you were close with at one point who may have a problem with the church, right? Mm-hmm. So this is something Scientology does. Scientology tells their members to come in. Once you've joined, you can't talk to anybody who's not a member of this organization.
Yeah, and they're not supposed to be on the internet. They're not supposed to have access to the, or apparently this is from Aaron Smith Levin.
Okay.
He's a guy that left Scientology and he's on Lex Friedman's podcast. And it's very, very interesting. And that, hands down, I feel like he was in much more of a cult than we were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listening to his story, I'm just like, wow.
That's full on cult.
We were not that bad.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's full on cult. They, if you get out of line, they actually lock you up.
Is that what he was saying? Is that when they do the testing with the,
well, that's to like get you started, I guess, but they actually lock you up and you're not, so one of the worst things you can do to a human being is keep them from other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Rogan's actually talked about this before. That's why they have solitary confinement in prisons.
Yeah.
Is because that is one of the worst things you can do to a human being.
That's the punishment.
That's the punishment, is keep them. And now some people are okay with it. Some people, that's the guy that ends up getting into solitary confinement, just sitting there all mm-hmm. day long. But for the most part, it drives people crazy. And so that's one of the reasons, one of the tenets of a cult would be to pull you away from your, special to those people, like there's a documentary on Scientology called Going Clear. I believe it's on HBO Max, and then there's also The Vow, which is on HBO Max. Now I watched their first season, and it's basically I forget the name of the group, but it's a boring series, so I wouldn't suggest it, because it's just talking heads. There's not a lot to it, but eventually this guy named Rainier
mm-hmm.
got these people involved, and it was supposed to be like a self-help, kind of like a Tony Robbins kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And eventually he got some of the women to get so enamored with him that they would do anything he said, and he got them to brand each other like property of him.
Jeez.
The logo of the whatever the name of the
business or cult or whatever.
Well, that's how it was kind of pushed. And there's tons of footage out there.
Is that The Vow? Is that The Vow?
That's The Vow. Yeah.
Yeah. And okay.
I forget the name of the group, but the actual documentary series is interesting, but at the same time, super boring. Like it was just like, it was a slog to get through. And I finally was like, because they had a second season come out and I'm like, I'm not watching that thing. I think I got what I want, because if it's as boring as the first season, but anyway,
well, and I think that goes back to what Brett said about like a predatory, like so I feel like as humans, we do have a kind of evolutionarily built in inclination for the divine, mm-hmm. right? Something outside of ourselves that we desire to worship. And so if somebody is to try and hijack that, we have this kind of built in desire to want to worship something outside of ourselves. And if somebody takes that and hijacks it for their gain, right?
Yeah.
Their money, their sex, right? Like all these things. I think that's kind of where you get into this cult, like cult mentality, building a cult. I mean, and then you get into Jim Jones.
Yeah, people use the argument with the Catholic Church, the whole scandal in Boston with the sexual abuse. I think it was Boston. It was on the West East Coast. And that whole scandal that happened, I believe it was the 90s. The Catholic Church didn't handle it well. They didn't do right. Mm-hmm. Puts a lot of people off. So whenever there's a scandal in a legitimate religion that has, like Brett Weinstein says, every organization has a little bit of corruption, but that corruption was bad enough that people just decided, oh, this is a cult and we need to tear the whole thing down. And Jordan Peterson uses this all the time. You're going to throw the wheat out with the chaff or the baby out with the bathwater. Is that what you're going to do? Because there's good things about it that we can glean wisdom from.
Yeah.
You know, and because of a couple of nefarious people, you're going to throw it all out completely. So that's the whole point with what we're doing here and discussing this. So,
well, and to be honest, I listened to Lex Fridman's podcast with Aaron Smith Levin on Scientology, him leaving Scientology. And then I also listened to Lex Fridman's podcast with Bishop Robert Barron. And it was kind of right after each other. And I was kind of like, with everything Bishop Barron's saying, maybe I'm Catholic.
Because you're agreeing with what he's saying.
I'm kind of like, this sounds, you know, so sounds pretty good. So the difference, like the kind of just seeing those two contrasts together. And now obviously this is coming from a guy that was talking anti Scientology. And if they were to have somebody out there on to talk pro Scientology, he might sell it to where it's, I'm like, well, I agree with a lot of that stuff. In fact, Lex Fridman in the podcast was kind of, he played devil's advocate a little bit and was like, well, I kind of believe that. Like, that sounds like that makes sense. You know, but once again, it sounds like there was that you take these good ideas, you take these things that, you know, parts of us that believe there's something out there that we desire to worship, and you hijack it for.
Yeah. Well, for nefarious reasons. Right.
Yeah.
So I guess what the definition would be is like, in a religion, you can have corruption. But the religion isn't controlled by the corruption, right? So the religion can course correct. It can become better. It can do, but if the corruption is the religion, like Scientology.
Mm. Mm.
Maybe that's where, maybe that's a better definition. So maybe corruption of an organization doesn't define the organization, but if it is a corrupt organization to begin with and it stays corrupt, that's the definition of a cult.
Hmm. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Interesting. I mean, a little bit along those lines, what did you think of Brett when he said, he basically was like, we don't know about Scientology if it's a cult yet. Time will tell. Basically was saying something to the effect of,
I don't know if he knows enough about it, because I have watched these documentaries and I've talked, like there's a ton of people who've who've left the Scientology church who were like, we had to give everything up to it. Like, mm-hmm. there was no autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another thing that defines a religion versus a cult. If you have to give everything up to the organization, then it's a cult. If you are still your own human being within the religion, then that's a religion. Because like unless somebody wears a cross or says I'm Catholic, you're not going to know that they're Catholic. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then, or they say I go to church, you know, once a week or whatever. But a Scientologist, and you may not know that they're a Scientologist until they tell it. But if they're completely devoted to the religion, you won't even see them. You won't even have an interaction with them. Right.
Hmm. Right. Hmm. I mean,
because they're not allowed to have interactions with people. I don't know. I don't know the details on that, because like Tom Cruise is a Scientologist. He's the most famous Scientologist, and you see when he's interacting with people. So does he get special privileges because he's the most famous Scientologist?
Aaron Smith Levin does mention that basically Scientology provides all of Tom Cruise's staff.
Hmm.
That basically everybody that works
for him
directly with him is a Scientologist.
So they're like spying on him constantly.
I no idea. I mean, obviously he has interactions with other actors and other
who aren't. Yeah.
I mean, it's
interesting.
And I don't want to hate, cause like, I love his movies and I
love his movies too.
I it's fun. And I'm not saying he's the greatest actor ever, but like, I love his stuff. So
I don't think he's made a bad movie in a long time. Like almost every movie he's come out with in the last little while, I've loved. I thought they were excellent. So it's not,
yeah,
it's hard to say whether, he seems like a recruiter for the Scientology church more than anything, as far as his involvement in it, you know. I don't know.
Yeah,
we got a glimpse, you know, 15 years ago, we got a glimpse of how crazy it was. And Steven Spielberg came out and said that it hurt his film and all that kind of stuff, you know, when
he had the interview, when he talked about it a little bit.
Well, yeah, he jumped on the couch and all that kind of stuff. That was all around about the same time.
That's right.
But yeah, you were going to say something about Jim Jones.
A little bit of research on Jim Jones and that whole thing. I actually,
what was the name of his group?
It was the People's Temple. Okay. was the name of his group. Now, for those who don't know, Jim Jones started the People's Temple in the U.S. They ended up going to another country. I can't remember. They all up and moved to another country in South America, I think. And they started basically a compound there, which eventually led to in 1978 a mass suicide. Where,
oh, is that the drinking the Kool-Aid people?
Drinking the Kool-Aid, yeah. Well, so
isn't it weird that a turn of phrase, like most turn of phrases, happened way like in the 1800s back,
mm-hmm.
but that turn of phrase happened like people, when people say when you're drinking the Kool-Aid, they're referring to that incident that happened
in the 70s. That's where it comes from. Now, it wasn't actually Kool-Aid. That's one kind of historical thing. It's a fallacy. Yeah. It was kind of a competitor at the time that was a sweet drink, sugary sweet drink.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't Kool-Aid. So,
well,
poor Kool-Aid getting the bad rap.
poor Kool-Aid. But
And the phrase, so how many people, the Kool-Aid just means, the phrase drinking the Kool-Aid just means that you are bought in and you're going to do and believe whatever this person, this organization says.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think that, that could be drinking the Kool-Aid, could be for a lot of people that, I mean, that could be for Republicans. It could be for Democrats. It could be for Apple users. It could be Samsung users, right? And this might be a definition that we want to just touch on here, is just that if you are, I mean, even an Apple user could technically be defined as cult mentality. Cult.
Yeah.
For the fact that they won't even date somebody that has a Samsung. I can't remember the he said there was a comedian that was just like, I texted this girl and she texted me back and it was green. And he's like, I never text her again because just not going to go there.
Well, it's a joke, obviously, but it's like,
it's a joke. And he's like, and my Apple phone could wake up, could get up at 4:30 in the morning every day and punch me in the face, and I still wouldn't switch.
wait till that company becomes so bad that, so the history, like just a tangent here, but history has shown that companies tend to falter after 50 years or I want to say 100 years, because like at one point GE was the biggest company in the world. Mm-hmm. And now it's Apple and Amazon. So it's like, how long is it going to be before they're no longer the biggest company in the world? Anyway,
who knows?
That's a tangent.
But anyway, so there could be cult-like mentality all over.
Human beings want a tribe, right?
Yeah.
That's and the problem.
That kind of goes back to what I was saying about, we have an evolutionary desire to, you know, overall ethic, believe in something higher than ourselves, a tribe, right? There's all these human built in things that we love that can be nefariously hijacked.
Yeah. And hijacked. Yeah.
We see this in Jim Jones. I mean,
what were the tenets of their faith?
Some of it was like, his rise in the 70s and the 60s and the 70s, being that we're all the children of God, and this was at the height of racial problems, racism,
the civil rights movement,
civil rights, and so he was kind of preaching this thing of that we all treat each other equally. Et cetera. So there were buy-ins that were good things. And there's a little, little clip of a gal that was like, you know, I was addicted to drugs, and this religion Jim Jones helped me get off of drugs, and now I'm going to school and I'm bettering myself and all these things. Well, I mean, he moves him out there to the middle of nowhere and convinces them that they're gonna do this mass suicide. And he even said, this was probably one of the first things that got me, because I wrote this little piece about it, and I was kind of attributing it to my own faith a little bit. And that was that And I mean, it just kind of opened, reading the story kind of opened my eyes a little bit. Hearing, so I listened to him talk where he told them that this is something you have to do because I'm a prophet and God is telling you to do this. Yeah, it was.
Did it start out corrupt or did it become
corrupt? I don't think so. I think it became corrupt. I mean, who knows? Like, he may have been corrupt. Jim Jones might have been corrupted at the very beginning. And it's been a while since I've done the research into it to kind of have an opinion on it. But I can't even remember how many people died. One thing that was interesting was that not all of them wanted to do it. I mean, the parents were forcing the children to drink it. Geez. And they were afraid that the authorities were going to come out and basically like ruin their little hate heaven. So that was kind of a fear thing. And then it went down. Some people survived. Some people kind of just like got out in time.
Didn't drink it when it drank the Kool-Aid
just got out
before, like, that happened,
before they were forced to drink it, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, jeez. So it
kind of goes back
actually, when I was researching it, you could listen to audio of them forcing people to drink it, and you got people crying.
That's horrible.
Oh, it's, dude, yeah. You go to a dark place. You can, yeah, it can take you to a dark place.
And that goes back to the definition of, like, how does it treat its individuals?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you could take communism as a cult, because communism always ends up treating the individual as a part of a group, collective. Mm-hmm. And then you have no autonomy. You were just part of the party. You stand in line. You toe the line. So that's,
and then becomes predatory.
And then it becomes predatory. Going back to
Brett Weinstein. Yeah.
So I really think that the definition really is, it comes down to how it treats the individual, and is it predatory in nature? Because you could argue that they all start out being like having the ideal of doing better and stuff like that, you know, but then maybe and I don't think Scientology started out that way. I think L. Ron Hubbard was getting taxed to death and was trying, because he had written like 500 books or something like that. And he was like,
so he wanted tax exempt
status. And so he found a way to do it. I think that in itself, not to say the great things about, but that's a brilliant way to get, you know, find a way to get out of doing your taxes, I guess.
Sure.
If you're that, you know, hung up about it. But he was a grandiosity kind of guy. He told really great stories and wanted to be known as like a hero of the Republic and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I heard this definition that cult plus time equals religion. And this would go back to kind of Brett Weinstein's kind of survival of the fittest, being survival of the fittest with religions, you know,
or the religions that stand the test of time.
Yeah. Basically, that religions.
This could actually happen to Scientology if they shaped up, and they stopped isolating people, and they stopped, you know, kind of enslaving people.
Mm-hmm.
If they stopped doing all of that and still kept their whole hokey pokey, like aliens came down and all that kind of stuff, that they could become a legitimate religion. Because that's essentially what Mormonism did, right? So they had a few things that people didn't like. You know, people didn't like the Adam God doctrine. People didn't like the polygamy.
Polygamy, yeah.
And so they got rid of those, right? And now they're a legitimate religion. So, I mean, I think Brett Weinstein has something there in that thought. You know, a lot of people will argue, you know, here's one thing that I want to talk about. So a lot of going through this journey of making this the channel and everything, I realized that many people equate or conflate, I am not sure, but like the whole idea of like you must control your bodily urges, they equate that with you are holding me back and causing harm to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this fragile society that we are in, right? So one of the biggest complaints about the LDS church is like, it's, what is it? It's like, don't have sex before marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And our society nowadays is like, have sex with whoever you want, whenever you want, however you want. But there's a lot of people out there who, if they follow that, their life becomes chaotic, right? If you are, if you are some dude who's got a bunch of baby mamas out there, who doesn't care about those kids, you are creating there's a video I just watched about a guy who's bragging about 7 kids from 7 different women, and he's not helping out with any of them. And it's like, you have 7 different kids who are going to be, who are going, because they don't have a father in their life, and because their father's a D-bag, they're going to perpetuate that in some way. Either they're going to have, you might, out of 7, you might have 1 that goes on and becomes successful and has a good life. But 6 of those kids, on average, they're going to have terrible lives. They're going to be in and out of prison. They're also going to have baby mamas or be women who have babies out of wedlock. And it's just this perpetuated gross thing. So where in all of that is, hey, don't have sex before marriage a bad thing? Maybe you should have sex with 1 person instead of a bunch of people. Because what you've done by feeding into your base instincts is you've created 7 generation or 7 people, and then you have their generation that's gonna, so this is, it's ongoing. It's the chaos of ongoing hedonistic give into my impulses. And so religion tells you not to do these things. And then people conflate that with, I wasn't allowed to be myself in my religion. Mm-hmm. So it's caused harm to me. And I now hate religion.
Yeah.
But unless you were actually physically beaten or put in a dungeon by your religion, maybe it didn't harm you.
Was it also horrible?
Was it horrible?
Was it so horrible that you know, you were encouraged and taught to, you know, sleep with someone that you love and have a commitment with them and raise children with them.
Like, is that such a bad thing? Like, so what I'm trying to get at, I guess, is like in this, in our current society, it's kind of looked down upon to have
restraint
on your base instincts, right? I mean it's like that's really what it comes down to. The restraint is a huge problem in our society, because everybody's basically told to give into these beliefs, give into these urges, you know.
If it feels good, do it.
Yeah, if it feels good, do it. You know, I mean, the murder rates are higher now. I mean, so people don't value life in general. I mean, it's it
I don't think murder rates are higher.
Yeah, they came out.
Suicide rates are.
Suicide rates and murder has, well, murder in specific cities has skyrocketed. I don't know. I don't know about all across the country, but murder rates are higher after COVID. But suicide rates are really high. And part of that, again, like, so I kind of tend to roll my eyes at people who go, I was traumatized by my religion. Oh, well, how are you traumatized by your religion? They go, oh, they didn't allow me to have sex with who I wanted to. That traumatized you? What? Or they made me feel bad for having sex when I was young. What? They didn't punch you in the face. Or, you know, that's
trauma. Maybe they made me feel bad. Yeah.
They made me feel bad. So I don't know. There's a lot of, this is a third rail that a lot of people don't like to get into, but I mean, it's, I think what it really comes down to is how it treats the individual, but also people conflate that, right?
Well, and also how it treats the family. So one quote that I saw, I can't remember who said this, but basically said that the future generations will be religious because they're the only one having kids. Something to that effect, right?
Oh, yeah. So the people who are having kids right now will also be religious people. But people who are non-religious tend to not have children.
Right.
Which
I think that's,
I don't know,
kind of what he was...
You know, even Sam Harris, who's like the godfather of atheism, he's got a daughter. So I don't know how accurate that is.
I'm not sure. I did read a stat in one of our earlier videos that said that religious people, religious women tend to have more children.
Yeah.
And we kind of talked about the birth gap and how that's gonna be a problem for society, and that might just be a partial result of the exodus out of religions.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an exodus out of religions. Now these people, there's less commitment in relationships, mm-hmm. right? Because you're having sex without marriage, and then that kind of facilitates just not the perfect system or time to have kids. So women go through all these relationships and then they age out of childbearing years. And which I thought the stats on that were kind of crazy on like how quickly it becomes harder and harder for women to have children.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we don't need it. That's another video, but we're talking about cults and religions. But in theory, if we wanted to see a jump back to replacement level birth rates, then we might want to see a return to religious belief.
Yeah, and they kind of go hand in hand, right? It's like, you know. And people tend to be burned early in life, later in life, go back to a religious belief. So that if they're burned early,
it does seem like people have a problem with religion when they've been burned by somebody in it a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be kind of that, it might be a cult mentality within the religion, right?
Yeah.
I had a time I was talking with a bunch of friends of mine. You know, we all grew up in this polygamist religion, a cult, diet cult. And he, and one,
it's going to catch on, Michael. It's going to catch on.
And one is still in it, and one has completely left it altogether. And hearing kind of the two different sides talking about it, one that is still in it was talking about how his childhood growing up in it was completely different than...
Oh, he had a good childhood.
And he then had a the good one... childhood. He was allowed to play video games. He was allowed to watch movies. Like, he went to public school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Completely different.
And the one who's not in it...
Wasn't allowed to go to school. And he was burned.
Oh, my gosh.
He was burned.
That is so interesting.
So his father had the cult mentality in his heart. And where the other guy's father didn't.
Well, okay, so it goes back to the, like, have you heard the analogy? If you hold a bird too tight, you squish it. And if you don't hold it tight enough, it flies away.
It flies away.
So there's this balance in between.
Maybe.
That wasn't met with either one of them. So the one still in the religion, and then the one that's left the religion he was held too tight, right? I mean, that could be a perfect analogy for that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That is so dang interesting. Cause that, oh man.
And this one friend he spent some time on the compound, but he didn't grow up on our,
the
ranch compound thing, polygamous compound. And so his experience was just so much different being raised in it than ours was. And he has no problem still being in it.
Yeah. 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 Still being in it. Yeah. Yeah.
And he gains, and like hearing him talk about it, like he gains value. He has friends in it and it's a community. And like having left it, I kind of miss, right? I kind of miss
the community. I kind of
miss this being able to, gather together and worship together. And
I think Jordan Peterson said this, that when people do leave religions, that's the number one thing that they miss is the community of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're animals that were made to live in communities. But
yeah,
I think we can wrap it up. Do you have any final thoughts?
Couple final thoughts. And this, I think, and I have this kind of belief that in the Bible, there's actually built in mechanisms to go against a cult. And so hear me out here. Mm-hmm. I came up with this thinking about Jim Jones and that whole debacle, mm-hmm. people dying, mass suicide, and I kind of wrote this out in this blog post that I did, and it was, and I think I titled it, I can't remember if I titled it, if God can be questioned, every man, if God can be questioned, every man should be. Okay. And
there should basis be no totalitarianism.
The basis of that is a story in the Bible in Exodus. And I kind of can't wait until, Jordan Peterson in their Exodus seminar talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's a moment where the children of Israel sin against God, and God decides that he wants to destroy the children of Israel and start over. And Moses talks God out of it. So let me just read.
This isn't the first time that it's ever happened, right? It happened with Lot.
I mean, in a sense, yes, Abraham talked God out of destroying Sodom and Gomorrah. If he could find, he bargained with God about it.
Bargained with God.
I guess I could read it. Maybe that we could save that for another time. But it's Exodus 32, verses 9 through 14. Yeah, basically Moses talks God out of destroying the children of Israel, and then God repents of his decision to destroy the children of Israel. Okay. So, and also down the road, Moses has a quote where he says, God would that all men were prophets. So there's this a little bit in built into the story of one,
like a check and balance.
Something, there's something there that should be able to be used against cult mentality.
If men are given power, they should always, their subjects should always be able to question that power.
In theory, yes. From these two stories, what I'm gleaning from these two stories is that if God can be questioned, every man should be. And if God would that all men were prophets. Now in the story, the way I see it from Moses, basically what happens is Moses has these 70 elders that go up with him to basically meet God. And then, so basically these guys are all kind of the higher ups of Israel. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of those guys or a couple of them come to Moses and they're like, hey, we've got these guys in camp. They're prophesying and they're not part of our 70. They're not part of our in group.
Yeah.
You need to go stop them. And Moses is kind of like, whoa, wait, on my account? Are you saying I should stop them on my account? Like, why would I stop these guys from prophesying? Now, if you dig deep into the story, it feels like to me that these guys are basically saying, we are the leaders.
You are
Moses,
not.
You need
this new guy coming into town preaching is not the leader. And we need to take him out.
We got to withhold our power over the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got our power over the people, and therefore you should stop these guys that are prophesying in the camp. And Moses, he's like, no, God would that all men were prophets. So I'm not going to like a tyrant, like a totalitarian.
Yeah.
Go stop these guys from, and who the hell knows what they were preaching. Like, I don't think it matters.
This is also what happens in the economy. They always say like a good business will thrive and a bad business will die. So if it's a good religion, it should thrive. If it's a bad, and that's
thriving
what,
ideas. This
that's what
this
Weinstein goes, is trying to get to is he's like a bad religion will eventually peter out.
Yeah. Yeah. And he even mentions that there was a similar religion that was a competitor to Joseph Smith in the early 1800s.
Yeah.
That he never got more than like 30 followers.
Yeah.
And it petered out. So what the hell? Was there something that, and I feel like, and this is, I think I've said this before, but I feel like there was kind of an essence. There was something that Joseph Smith was tapping into that speaks to people. Mm-hmm. And good or bad, tyrannical, did he start to become a tyrant? I mean, this goes back to like, are you going to become the tyrant?
Yeah,
or are
yeah.
you going to be like,
well,
this,
you're the,
the prophet of prophets kind of at the beginning of it, of like Moses saying, God would that all men were prophets. Like, well, why would I stop these guys
and power
from having their opinion?
Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. So that might've been what happened with Joseph Smith, right? He started out in good intentions and then, you know, got corrupt, you know, and that's the whole thing with Weinstein is he's trying to point out that there every organization has corruption. If it survives the corruption, then maybe we can call that a religion.
Maybe.
And
yeah.
And a cult can't survive corruption if it's nefarious intents on human beings. Like, mm-hmm. but you know, that's where people mix up the whole idea of like, you're keeping me from my base instincts, you know, to you know, so that's what's keeping me from. It's a weird, complicated scenario where people always conflate the restraint on their ability as a corrupt religion, right? So it's a
cult is just what I don't like.
Cult is just the religion I don't like. That might be true,
right?
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
And so, it's not even to, you know, you could get into basically any organization of human beings could be considered a cult.
Which is why I think we should revisit this. I think we should do a
part two.
Every so often do an episode on this.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some interesting stuff. The socials. Do we have that?
Follow us on Twitter, Brothers V Random. YouTube, The Brothers Random. Obviously, you're here. So The Brothers Random on Rumble. So we are on Rumble. Instagram is at The Brothers Random. Our email is The Brothers Random V at gmail.com.
Yeah, send us an email. Tell us what you think about the show. The begs happen now, so subscribe and like and share with your friends. Also, we have we're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and that's it. Until next time, brother, keep reading, keep listening, keep watching, learn more. See ya.
See ya.